Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to One Heat Minute Productions. I'm your host, Blake Howard. This is our very special bonus episode of the podcast, talking to friend of the show, the great filmmaker, the great actor, Macon Blair. Today, I'm talking to him about The Toxic Avenger. This is his film that's been made a couple of years ago. It's taken a while to find its way to an extensive release, but man alive, is it worth it. If you love the old Toxie, you will simply adore it. It is fun. It is gruesome. It's a beautiful tonic. It seems to be this ageless franchise that loves to really smash greed and disgusting exploitative people with the most disgusting hero that we all deserve. And I'm so happy that I get to talk to Macon about it finally. Without further ado, here's me talking to Macon Blair.
Nice to talk to you again.
Lovely to talk to you again. Not for an anniversary piece, but for something that you made. In fact, the last time we spoke off air, I was pestering you about when I was going to see this movie. How are you feeling?
Didn't know. Right? At that time, I did not know.
How are you feeling right now?
I'm excited. I feel very grateful. Above all things, I feel very grateful. It's sort of like It had a long time out in the wilderness, and then it landed with a really great group of people who were working really hard to get it out. And I'm very happy. I feel very grateful.
I've seen some very fun reactions from the Melbourne International Film Festival. People very excited about it. It had a rapturous reaction. You guys were obviously just at Comic-Con. Can you pinpoint the moment, like, I know, like, it's hard in the fog of right now, but when was the moment that you said to yourself, like, I have to make this movie, I have to do it? Can you take us back to that moment?
Well, look, if I'm being honest, it's like I was asked to pitch for the script, and that happens a couple of times a year if I'm lucky, and every single one of them I have the feeling like I have to get this because I want to work on something, and B, I need the job, and C, it's tied to my health insurance. It's all of those things. So it was not a matter of like, I had carried around in my life the notion that like, I need to make a Toxic Avenger remake. It never occurred to me, honestly, until they started talking about the screenwriting job. But it was a movie that I saw at a very formative age, when I was young, and I was the perfect age to receive it. And it was also at a time when I was starting to make movies with my friends, and it was really inspirational in that way. Like not just the sense of humor, but like it appeared to be a movie that regular people had made on their own terms. It was not Hollywood, and that was the first time I really was like, oh shit, look at this. You can do that. And so when they suggested, do you want to come in to pitch to write this? I did have the thought that it was like that there was something symmetrical about that. Like, this is kind of like going back to the seventh grade. And if I were to get this job, it could in fact be like making one of those movies that I made with my friends in seventh grade, but with the machinery of, a studio behind it. And there was something that was kind of like hilarious and really exciting about that idea. And so that I kind of pursued it with that in mind, was like, if we could make it look and feel like the original, if we could make it look and feel like those movies that I grew up making, and have it have that kind of homemade sort of quality, and not have it feel too overly polished or too overproduced, then that could be a lot of fun. And so I sort of dove into it with that attitude.
The only thing I would say is, in your wildest dreams in seventh grade, it's like, I'm going to make the seventh grade movie. But also, Kevin Bacon,
No,
just
never.
like,
And there's
that's the
exactly.
coolest thing. I could, that my feeling with you exactly watching it was like, as soon as I saw these amazing actors and this crew that you put together for this exercise, I'm like, this just feels like it's so fun. It feels like it's fun for you. I'm imagining it as I'm watching it. That's a weird dissociative experience. It
No,
was what was enjoying it.
it absolutely is. And I really believe that, like, I mean, I don't know, maybe not like Apocalypse Now or something with a famously troubled shoot, but for the most part, I kind of feel like that if the movie is fun to make, then there is something like molecular that the audience can receive, and it's sort of like it's fun to view on some level. That may not be true in every case, but we had a blast with this one, and of course there's a certain level of like, okay, there's hard work, there's a lot of organization, there's a lot of management, and everybody's being very professional. That is true. And then I can also step back from that and kind of like in a outside of my own body viewpoint, and just kind of be very delighted at like, yeah, dude, it's fucking Kevin Bacon in this fucking seventh grade ass movie that I was lucky enough to make. It's hilarious.
So you're there now. We spoke about this, our last convo we were talking about another one of the, your great films, Green Room, which is now more than 10 years old, and that there was an uncertainty of when it would be released because it had a festival screening or some kind of screening in the States or something like that. And at the
Yes.
time I was pestering you incessantly as someone who knows you a little bit. I was like, I need to see this movie, man. All I'm seeing is people reacting to it online. And it feels exactly like the dose of what I want. So gimme, gimme, gimme. And you were like, I don't know, man. I don't know when this is going to come out. At what point did Was it ever a concern for you, like, wow, this thing is never going to come out? Like, was I just wondered because I didn't get a chance to talk to you about it because obviously I was trying to be sensitive to this is such a challenge for all filmmakers. Like, oh, this thing, it needs to be a certain way. A studio has to green light that it comes out. Just a very interesting situation. I was just like, well, this thing is made and Macon seems to have had a great time making it. And all the audience that are reacting to it seem to enjoy it. Every reaction is like, yeah, it's exact gives me all those feelings. So when was there a moment, was there ever a moment you were like, oh, this thing's never going to come out? Like, did you have that doubt?
It crossed my mind, sure. It's not that the studio would green light it coming out or not. The studio, Legendary, producers that I was working with were hugely supportive the whole way through. It was their idea. Like, I didn't bring this movie to them. They cooked the movie up, and they were behind it the whole way, and they were the whole time were working to try and find a distributor for it. So I had no doubt with them that they were totally steadfast, but it does cross my mind because there is a ladder, and above them there is some sort of corporate structure that I'm not even aware of, people that I've never interacted with who they could just as easily look at a spreadsheet and decide that, we're not going to release this movie just as easily as or you know what I mean? Like who knows what would happen? So it sort of crossed my mind, because you hear about stories like something like Batgirl, which was a huge bummer. And I know some of the people that worked on that, and that's like a heartbreaking thing to spend so much time working on a movie and to have it sort of vanish is just sort of so
And very recently, Coyote versus Acme too. It was the same
that one
thing.
too that one my understanding is that one's been rescued and that
They
will be
finally
coming
rescued it.
out. Yes, but at the time that was another one, so it's like there's precedent out there, so of course it crossed my mind. But I was also in touch with the legendary people, and I knew that they were working overtime trying to figure out a distributor. And the long and short of it is, it just took a while to find the right one, and the right one ended up being Cineverse. And maybe that time period, in hindsight, was a good thing because it put them in a position on the success of Terrifier 3 to take on this. And, I'm not really in the mix with those kinds of conversations, but it seemed like the timing ended up being right, and we were able to connect with Cineverse at the right time. And the reason why they were right is because they're not just releasing it to like, oh, we've got it and we'll dump it to a platform, but they really identified the potential of it to be a crowd pleaser, and so that's kind of how they're marketing it and how they're putting it out into the world. And so if waiting a couple of years to get connected with someone like that is what you do, then I'm happy to wait 2 years to do that. A little bit of hand wringing, sure, but all's well that ends well.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say the reactions from the time, like if you care for it and you put it in the right spaces and you put it with the right people, like there's an audience for it. I had a blast with this movie. I just want to say
Oh, good.
it's a tonic of a movie. You know, it's just like, oh, this is what movies are. We like vengeance and gross monsters and heads exploding and holy shit, Macon turned Kevin Bacon into a kind of deer monster. This is just the best kind of time at the movies. This is exactly what you want. You've got Peter Dinklage here. So I want to ask you, making the movie, when you were casting it and setting it up, the people that you pulled together to do this, who was the person that was you were least expected was so down for this kind of like, as you put it so beautifully, not in a pejorative way, seventh grade, like people making a fun movie. Who was the most down that you were shocked was so down to come and play with you guys here?
Shocked makes it sound like that, like I th there's no imagination that this person would be up for something like this, and that's not the case. But shocked that we would get so lucky to get Kevin Bacon, I think would be it. I mean, I think he has a great sense of humor, and I think he has a great sense of humor about himself, and I don't think that he's like above doing movie like this at all. I didn't take it for granted that he would want to on this particular one, and he responded very quickly. Like I mean, I don't know exactly, but it was something like we sent it to him on a Friday, and I feel like on a Monday he had written back, kind of saying that he was interested and wanted to talk about it and get involved. And then when I spoke to him, he said to me that it was a very easy yes for him. And so that was one that I just felt like th there was something about wanting to get some kind of a classic movie star to be that kind of a villain that seemed like a really fun opportunity, and I couldn't really think of one that was better than him. And so we just kind of took a gamble and hope, kind of crossed our fingers that he would respond to it, and he did, and that was just delightful. It was a huge leap of faith that he took with us, and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, it looks it. And also, I just want to say, with all of the particulars of actually getting this movie made, I think that companies who poison the environment and as the villain of a movie and don't really care about the well-being of their community and are just there to basically exploit them until they have nothing left. They're a husk. Unintentionally, he's aged super well as a villain for a movie. I think audiences might even like this more than the second that you made it of like, oh, we're just seeing lots of this. We're seeing lots of this behavior. Did you have any, obviously you watched it a million, countless times, editing it, crafting the script, you're there on set. But did you get any sort of sense of the electricity of the feeling of this, I don't know, like cauterized or something for the audience? Because when I was watching it, I was like, oh no, this is mate. Like, I can feel people having a take that like Toxie has a, its life cycle in the world has always been because of exploitation and this sort of like unexpected
right.
revenge thing. And so like,
right.
And it's not only exploitation, it's the way it's been made, but the exploitation of these villains, and they cause this thing to come after them, this sort of symbol of vengeance comes after them for it. It just felt so on time. It doesn't feel like it's delayed at all. It feels like it's exactly the right time for this movie.
In some ways, I mean, maybe so. It's also, I think it could have come out any old time, and it might have felt timely. Is kind of what I think. And I mean, we made it and we shot it in 2021. It premiered in 23. I wrote it in 2019. So there was never a like, I want to remark upon anything that's specifically timely. It was more like, I have to write a good guy, so I have to think about ways to characterize the good guy. So like anybody, I would infuse him with characteristics that I find admirable. He's caring, he's curious, you know, he's brave. And then you got to write the bad guy, and you infuse them with characteristics that are the opposite of that. Like, well, they're greedy, they're cruel, they're stupid, you know. And it's sort of like, if it feels timely, that's terrible and that's unfortunate, but in a way, it's sort of that kind of thing sort of never goes
never gets old.
But yeah, it was just sort of like, what's the worst kind of villain that we could create for our good guy to go up against? And that was sort of like, in addition to all of the, there's sort of like cackling street level bad guys that he can fist fight. And that's a lot of fun. And you want Toxie to be able to do that, but there's this larger sort of systemic thing that he's fighting against, which was part of the original too.
Yeah. And in the bones seemed of
very
it.
Important to sort of continue that. So it was that was always going to be there regardless of when it happened to be made or released.
Do you have a favorite memory making the movie?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of really, really, a lot of beautiful ones. I think one was I one of those guys that I started making movies together with in seventh grade came out there and was in the movie. And so it, on a very literal level, it was not just sort of like in terms of tone or vibe, but like actual the components, it really was like a time travel back to just like grabbing your buddies after school with a VHS camera and sort of like, let's go figure out a scene to shoot. And which was the whole thing that got us sort of like, that sort of got us on the path of movie making, like in general. And there was something that was very circular about that I liked, and just felt very grateful for. And that was definitely one of those able to step outside of my own body and be like, I can't believe how things turn out. This is remarkable. Lloyd coming to the set and getting to see a sort of like new version of this thing that he had created many years ago and sort of founded his whole institution. I think that was special because he seemed pleased, and it was really important to me that he feel like the legacy of his baby was not being disrespected. So that was really special. And just, you know, just looking around at the cast and the crew, that everybody was just really working at the top of their game to do this strange kind of personal weird movie was just remarkable, and I was just always sort of like very appreciative and kind of awestruck by how the whole thing had turned out.
Yeah, it was really nice to see Lloyd in there. I can't remember what you've got. Just the hospital grump. I think you've got Lloyd, the hospital grump, in there as the character. But it's very fun to see that he got to be a part of it too.
Yeah, that was before I had any kind of a story. I knew that we needed to have some sort of a cameo to him, and so that was designed. The reason why I'm playing that character is so that you've got this noisy character that appears a couple of times in the movie in the background, kind of being noisy. And the idea was that, like, then he could be noisy at the end of the movie, and the reveal would be that Lloyd is standing next to him, basically telling him to knock it off. And so it's like the cameo is designed to be Lloyd going, shh, voice down.
There are so many other great actors I wanted to talk to you about. Peter Dinklage, obviously, Jacob Tremblay, like these are, I mean, Tremblay from like a kid is unbelievable. It's like
Really strong
prodigious,
young actor, yeah.
so strong. And then you've got Peter, who is can literally do anything. And I think people forget with the Game of Thrones fog that he was in a terrific comedy, Death at a Funeral, as a hell like that was like where some of us saw him for the first time and we were like, that guy is hilarious. He just seems, knowing you a little bit, he seems like you guys would have gotten along on your sense of humor alone, and that this and playing this very serious and sweet and good guy, but also just the fun of it and the silliness of it. I think that, can you talk a little bit about working with Peter? Because I feel like you guys would have gotten along like a house on fire.
We did, and that was sort of, I mean, in part like dynamite actor, but also knowing his sense of humor, because I had met him a little bit before. I mean, we had never done anything together, but we had sort of stayed in touch, and he would send me some scripts to read, or I would send him some scripts to read, and we would sort of trade notes. And through that, I kind of was like, oh, we like the same things, we dislike the same things in movies. I mean, I somehow didn't know he was from New Jersey, but just thinking about, like, okay, we could get this real, if we could get this powerhouse actor, then the first 30 minutes of the movie before he becomes a monster, it's very valuable real estate, and we really need to make sure that the audience is really connected to this guy and rooting for him and empathetic for him, and very, very quickly with very little material. And so I thought he would be great for that, and it was sort of like, let's keep our fingers crossed and send it to him. And he wrote back. He was like, I'm from New Jersey. I love the Toxic Avenger. I grew up with it too. And I was like, I don't know why I thought I would have to explain this the tone to you, but he totally got it. And so he was on board very quickly and didn't really need a lot of translation, as far as like, it's kind of stupid, but it's stupid on purpose in a particular way. And he got that and liked it. And so once he got on board, that was actually the thing that got the movie greenlit, because the studio was very, they were behind it and they were supportive, but they were like, you need some kind of a famous somebody to be that part in order to activate the whole thing. And that's what got it going.
Yeah, he's so great in it. It's excellent. And I just wanted to, you touched on something there that I wanted to talk about, which is like, is it harder to make something that is on this line? I mean, I know, I imagine like back in the day when this was made, and it's like Lloyd making this and Joe Ritter and those guys who originally made this movie, they're making it and their budgets are at like, the seventh grade budget is probably as fair as I can say. Like, they're so tiny, they're being so aspirational, they're cutting all these amazing corners, and all this beautiful invention is coming out of just having no resources. And then you fast forward to 2025 or 2021 when you guys were making the movie, and just like our ability with technology to futz with things, to play with tone, to play with light, to play with editing tools and software and cameras and all those things. Is it harder to make something that has that grubbiness to it? Like, is it harder to maintain the grubby?
It's a good question. I didn't find that necessarily hard, because we communicated that very early on. And so, in other words, like, when I Dana Gonzalez was the DP, and I spoke to him about like, to put it broadly, like that kind of grubbiness was something we were going for. And the same thing with Alex Cameron, the designer, or Vanessa Porter, the costumer, that like that kind of, however it makes sense in their particular departments, that hand-stitched quality and that avoiding anything that's too produced or polished or slick is what we were going to try to do. And it took some trial and error, and sometimes things were too rough or not. It's all kind of like a moving target, but everybody was in agreement, the producers as well, that's what we were going for. And part of that was an idea about what this movie could feel like and how it could feel fun and special and unique in 2021 or 25, whenever. And part of it was so that it would feel consistent with the original, because I think as much as people, the original endures for a lot of reasons, and a lot of it is Mark Torgel and Mitch Cohen. A lot of it is the look of the character and everything, but I think a lot of it is that kind of like they did it themselves. And so, it obviously there's sort of like, that there is a larger machine behind this one. That's just sort of like, you see the logos at the beginning of the movie. That's like, people know that. So it's not like trying to sneak that in and pretend like we're something we're not, but it's a conscious choice to kind of like, if it were a song, you would play it on an older guitar that's a little bit more battered, and you would record it on a four track, and that's the aesthetic that you're going for. It's not like, it's not something you're avoiding. And so that was just sort of like a conversation that we had early, and we continued to have on set, and continued to have again in the editing room. And so it's an ongoing thing, but it wasn't like something that we had to battle for. Like, everybody was in agreement that that was on some level, part of the DNA of the movie.
What's been the best reaction to the movie since you've now started to see it go out? Was what's ha, have you been able to sneak into a preview audience? Have you been able to see a movie going audience get frothy for it? Like, what's your what's have you watching it come out? What's now been the best thing that you've seen?
Well, I haven't seen anything in this time period. It'll come out on, it's Sunday where I am now, so it'll come out the coming Friday, and so fingers crossed. But for me, the two festival screenings that we had in 23, one was at Fantastic Fest in Austin, and one was at Beyond Fest in Los Angeles. And I will admit we were perhaps being graded on a curve, because those audiences are kind of like,
They're down to clown.
they're zoned in on this type of movie, but they loved it. And it was just kind of like, it's a particular sense of humor and a particular type of joking around, and it's also a kind of like, there's this sentimental streak through it that is sort of like, on one hand, playing itself very seriously, and then on the other hand, there's like weird mutant bird puppets and like baby heads and stuff. And so it's like, it's doing these things, and to me, it works. And to my brain, it makes sense. But you never know if that's going to translate. And so, the first time we show that to an audience, in its finished form, and they're laughing at all the right places and applauding at all the right places, was hugely gratifying. We also, I mean, to be fair, had some really rough test screenings with, it was earlier cuts of the movie, so that was part of it, and maybe some of the effects weren't as finished, or we had not, it ran a little bit longer, so maybe it overstayed its welcome. And also maybe the audiences were just not, it was blind recruiting, so they don't know what they're coming to see. There's just random people. We had one on St. Patrick's Day, and people just were recruited without knowing what they were going to see. And we got a bunch of people with leprechaun hats on that were already drunk when they showed up, and they watched like the first 10 minutes and just left the movie theater. And I just remember feeling like, oh my God, I have miscalculated the joke on this. And I'm
I
going
don't
to
think the audience wants to sit in a movie theater and stop drinking on St. Patrick's Day for long enough to even consume anything, let alone toxic if you have no clue what it is.
It was fucking grim. It was really grim. But, you know, we also got good feedback that this part is too long and this part doesn't make sense. And we refined it and we got it tuned up. And now the version that it is one that I'm proud of. And hopefully the people that are going to see the movie are not like wandering in, like expecting some, I don't know, some dignified, I don't know. So like,
I think even more so these days, right? Like probably growing up closer to our age, I was always down for a new movie, just going to the movies and willing to be surprised for anything. And so, you know, sometimes when you've got a film festival environment, you might know, okay, there's a really cool movie with a star or a director I really like, so I'm going to go see that. But there's another movie before it that I've never heard of, so I'm going to go check it out. It just doesn't feel like that happens as often. So, like, it's funny that I don't want you to, and I say this is like with kindness, it's like, I was so excited about you making this movie, but I'm excited to see a Toxic Avenger movie because I know what it is. And I feel like the audience who's going to go along, they know what it's going to, they want a little bit of that, or they've seen bits and pieces of it in the past and they want to come back and get a refreshed perspective. So yeah, well, man, I'm really happy for you because
Thank you.
Truly you're one of the most eclectic filmmakers out there, whether making big stuff, small stuff, indie stuff, stuff you star in, and you're a season tickets guy. So you making Toxie, man, I was like, oh, what the hell's making got to say about Toxie is my perspective. So I can't wait to see what this is like, because I wanted to see your sensibility, but it's so you, and I think you've done an amazing job with it, and I'm just really pleased now that you've had the time that, you know, whatever time it's taken to get out there, it's got out there. And in Australia, it's coming out through a local distributor called Umbrella. And,
very cool.
And they're a big physical media company as well. So it'll go out to the right audiences. People will see it. But then, you know, the physical media freaks will get to see it with all of its beautiful home entertainment glory and keep it on their shelf in a Toxie box set. So I'm sure they'll do that too. So, man, congratulations.
I don't know what the other special features will be, but there I did get the opportunity to do a commentary track, which I've never really gotten to do before, so that was a lot of fun. Hopefully that's included on the DVD.
Whoa, can't wait for that. Congrats, man, so great to see you. I'm looking forward to talking to you again soon.
Anytime at all. It's great to see you. Hope all's great on your end, and I look forward to talking again soon.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.